Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, January 6th, 2026. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. It seems pretty bright and I think we're expecting some snow in a couple of days. So that makes it even better. But man, it just seems like a long time since I talked to you. You know, I really do love and appreciate the holiday break, you know, from radio, the hiatus. It's always neat. Serena and I were talking about it. It's a different vibration. It's a different pace, so to speak, over those 2 weeks. And especially since it was kind of a quiet Christmas, and really lovely. I mean, really, really lovely, but it was great and it was growthful. And I will talk about that later in the teaching segment. But, you know, honestly, I don't know if I'm in holiday mode exactly, but I'm still really happy with my little Christmas tree. You know, it's still up. It's beautiful. It's teal-colored lights. Set just a great ambiance in my living room, especially at night, you know, when Grace and I kind of cuddle up and watch TV for a little bit. It's just peaceful and cozy and beautiful, and I think I'll miss that when I put it away, but I'm not in any hurry to put it away. And really and truly, I don't think there are any hard, fast rules for when you have to take your decorations down. I don't have any colored lights up outside, so, you know, that takes that pressure off. But you know, I used to... There are different rules, you know, like one of them is you leave them up until the Epiphany. Well, the Epiphany is today. And for those of you that aren't familiar with that, that was the day that the wise men showed up with their gifts for the Christ child. So, you know, after the Epiphany is good to take down Christmas decorations, I guess. But if you live in Denver, you can leave them up through the stock show. The National Western Stock Show, which starts January 10th and ends January 25th. So, you know, we've got 20 more days if you follow those rules until you have to take your tree down. But if you have a live tree, it's probably past its prime anyway. But anyway, the Capitol building is lit up with Christmas lights through the stock show. So, you know, if it goes for the Capitol building, it goes for anyone else that wants to follow. Actually, you know what, though? I know myself. And one day, I'm going to walk into the living room and just feel complete with my Christmas tree, I feel complete with the holidays. They're done, over. But just, it'll be the right time, and I'll just know it. And then I'll take it down. And then I'll be happy to have the house back to normal. Or that room back to normal, because I didn't, that was really the only room I decorated. So that's good. You know, I spared myself from the whole house. But anyway, I hope you had lovely holidays, lovely, lovely Christmas, lovely holidays, whatever you celebrate. And I really do wish you a wonderful, happy new year. And again, you know, we get what we give. So everything is, it's always up to us. What we put out into the world is what we're going to draw back to ourselves. We live in a relative existence. It's all relative. So, you know, the new year right now, still, it's only 6 days old. It's a blank slate. It's an absolute blank slate. So if we can let go of expectations. And what I mean by expectations are past experience, you know, expectations based on past experience. Let them go. Right now we are in this present moment, which is all that is. And it's full of everything good if we choose to have it. And I don't mean to sound like a Pollyanna, but really, if you can just be here right now and breathe, there's really nothing else you need. You know, really and truly, that's peace. That's God. That's Source. That's practicing the presence, just being quiet, feeling the movement of spirit within. And within us is the kingdom of heaven. you know, the storehouse, the spiritual storehouse, which contains every single thing that we could possibly need, all good, and nothing is ever withheld from us. God is not a withholding God. As Reverend Ike would say, God's got nothing more to give us because God is us. So it's up to us to open out a way for those things to come forward, the things that we want to experience. And the way we experience them is by making this the first step ourselves. In other words, you want to be happy? You want happiness? Make somebody happy. Make yourself happy. Realize nothing comes from outside of you. It's all generated from within. So, you know, that's, you can make the new year any way you want it to be. You really can. That's the truth of it. It's up to us. Totally up to us. So, anyway, that was a little aside. This show is live today, yay, on 12radio.com and streaming on YouTube. If you'd like to join the chat, you can go to 12radio.com, click chat, and then click the YouTube link, or it's posted under my banner in 12radio. Or you can just subscribe to my channel. I don't do readings on the show, but if you would like a reading or a healing from me, you can find me every day on 12listen.com. I'm usually available mid to later morning Pacific into the evening, but if you don't see me or if I'm busy, just schedule a call, put in a callback request. I'm notified immediately via text and I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. And I'll always do my best to meet your schedule. Always. I have a new 15-minute time-based session available. It'll be available for the rest of January, and it's called Clear for the New Year. And it kind of dovetails on what I was just talking about. It's really all about meeting the new year clear and on purpose. We'll identify and release limiting beliefs and energy to facilitate your powerful expression in 2026. It's a great way to start the year. And, you know, clear and on purpose. On purpose means making a decision, you know, what you want it to be like, how you want it to be. And then again, putting that out. You first. It's always us first. So anyway, that's a great session. A great way to start the new year. On 12listen.com, just a reminder that we have reduced rates on calls and chats a few times a week, typically Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, and the 12th of each month, which is 12th day. If you want to be notified of our specials, go to 12listen.com and sign up for 12 promotions, which means you just leave your email address. While you're there, post what you're grateful for on the gratitude board. And that gratitude board is powerful. And that's a first step, too, in demonstrating what you want in your life is being grateful for it. And being grateful for every single thing you can find every day to be grateful for. Gratitude is a powerful, attractive energy, really powerful. And on the gratitude board, you just write what you're grateful for, whether it's in your experience or not. And the advisors at 12listen add our intention to yours. So it's a sweet way for us to support you. And I invite you to take advantage of it. And I just want to thank you again for listening. However and whenever you do, there's programming on 12radio 24/7. There are archives of all the shows from all the hosts in the on-demand section at 12radio.com. You can download them anytime you want. And 12radio is always a great source of inspiration, information, and support. So again, I invite you to take advantage. I also want to remind you to tune in this Friday, the 9th, January 9th, for the prediction shows. Serena is the mastermind behind them. I know they're going to be great. They will start at 9 a.m. Pacific time and go for a couple of hours, hour and a half. Then they're taking a break, and then they will be back at 1:30. So, and that'll go for another couple of hours. So it's a fun day to spend on 12radio. And so I invite you again to take advantage of that as well. It'll be great. There's, I think, 10 people that are participating, 10 advisors. So you're going to get a taste of a lot of different people, and that'll be great. And right now, I just want to say thanks to Serena for all she does for producing the show today and for all she does for us on 1-2 Radio, which is everything. And right now, let's just move into the teaching segment by listening to a few minutes of a piece of music called In the Cloud Lodge. It's by David and Steve Gordon, and it's from the Buddha Lounge 2 CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it, and I'll be back right after. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone, and I'm so happy that you're here. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. I thought it was big and a great segue. So I hope you thought so too. So here we go, voice. As I said at the beginning of the show, I want to talk about what I don't know if learned is the correct word, but maybe more realized on my holiday hiatus. You know, as I said, that 2-week break is just is a special time. And it really was a quiet Christmas. I had a lot of time to listen to my favorite teachers and work on a painting and, you know, just be available for whatever showed up. I still worked every day. You know, I was online every day. I wrote my articles for the Power Peak and my scopes. But maybe because it was the holiday time, there was just a different atmosphere, you know, a different pace. And it was very, very nice. So acceptance, our overarching theme has been for a while, is still really foremost in my consciousness. It's because there is so much to it. So much to it. And I know, as I said, I've talked about it a lot, but it's a concept that as you practice it, just seems, or as I can only speak from my experience, as I practice it, just seems to get deeper and deeper. And because of awareness, you know, you're aware of one level, but awareness works that way anyway. You know, you become aware of something and then you start to delve into it, and it expands, because I think nothing is as simple as we think it is. And acceptance certainly is not simple. And, you know, when somebody, it starts out like, you know, well, just accept it for what it is. Okay. How? You know, how do I do that? I think as human beings, we're not good at that. We're just not. I don't think, well, I know it doesn't come natural to us because we want things to be the way we want them to be. And I think sometimes we think if we accept whatever's showing up in our experience just for what it is, somehow, some way, we're just giving up. You know, we're giving up. We're not doing what we should do. And acceptance is a whole different thing, a whole different thing. And as I, you know, started to say, as I become more aware of it, I see examples of it in every, you know, almost everything that I've been reading, which I love. And Mark has a technical term for that. You know, when you want a red car, all of a sudden you see all kinds of red cars. But this isn't that. This is affirmation, you know, affirmation, expansion. I want to know about this. I want to know how to use it. I want to know how, you know, when it shows up, because sometimes I don't know that we're always aware of it. And I know I'm sounding kind of vague here, but acceptance is having what is as it is, the circumstance, you want to call it that, as it is, having yourself exactly where you are at that moment, and having the relationship between the two. And that means however you feel about it, for one, and probably other things. You know, if it's something that you have to do something about, you know, just accepting that. Okay, I really don't want to do this, but it looks like I'm going to have to do this, this, and this. And through that acceptance, when you accept it, you get the support you need from spirit, from life, to just take care of it. And then it becomes a non-event. You know, something that you would have, you know, like gone into a tailspin before, or made really big, is nothing. And that too comes back to the fact that everything is temporal. Everything is moving. Everything that comes into being passes away. Nothing is as big as we think it is in this physical plane, as big as we've believed it is, humanly speaking. So, and one of the things that that came into my mind, just to start with, because this is lovely, there's a quote. I have a card, and I've talked about it before, that I've had for years, and it's just this really lovely photograph of probably maybe the late 1800s of a street sweeper. And it looks like, I don't know where he is. It looks like someplace in Europe, probably. Just really lovely old photograph. But on the inside is a quote from Walt Whitman. And it said, "From this hour, I ordain myself lost of limits and imaginary lines." Well, how are we lost of limits and imaginary lines if we're not accepting what is? We create those imaginary lines. We create our own limits. Acceptance is a way through. So that was kind of one little tap on the shoulder while I was over the past week. But the thing is that truth is truth. All roads lead to Rome, Rome being the realization that I am that. The individualization of source. And the thing about acceptance is that it reveals that truth. Because we move through whatever the experience is, whatever our feelings are, we move through them, through having them, and come to truth, which is, I am that. So consciously accepting circumstances, myself and my feelings for what they are at any given time, is freedom. It is truly freeing. And the more I am conscious of it, the more I do it, the more I feel that. And of course, I can only speak from my experience, but my energy shifts when I stop resisting and accept whatever is happening. And then I admit that I don't know how to handle it. I don't know. So I turn it over to that which lives me, and the weight falls off my shoulders. And then answers come. You know, whatever I need show up. And it happens all the time because I get out of the way. That's the other thing acceptance does. It gets our head out of the way. It gets struggle totally and completely out of the way. And that is a healing. So one of the things on my list of what I wanted to do over the break was to work on a painting that I started in October. And this is the first painting that I've done since 2022, just because of a ton of stuff that happened between then and now. But I'd put it aside when I had to get ready for my family to visit, you know, to get my cleaning done. And then after they left, there was a bunch of random stuff that happened, including the holidays, not to mention the holidays. And I just wanted to get back to it. And I realized it's like I really want to paint. I want to get this because I've got a great start on it. And I brought all my paints back out again. I put them away because people were going to be here. And I brought them back out. And just bringing them back out was like the invitation to get back. You know, it's like, oh, it's that lovely pull. But what I realized was the only way I could really be in the flow of in the flow of creativity and in the flow of painting, which is really bliss, was to give it its own time. And in other words, what I mean by that is not try to do it in between phone calls, you know, not be online and you know, trying to paint and then the phone rings and then you go back and you have to get your groove again or you try to get a groove again. So I took New Year's Day off to paint. Now, that was a big deal because I don't remember the last time I took a day off for myself. I love my work. I love my clients. I work every day. It's not a hardship. It's not, oh, you know, martyr. It's not that. It's my dharma. By working with people, by helping people, by healing people, or being the instrument through which healing flows for people, I'm healed. I mean, it's just, it is a circle. It is reciprocal. But it is what I'm here to do. And you know, I certainly have taken time off for family or appointments or if I don't feel well or if my voice is whacked. But that was because I took time off because I had a reason. You know, there was a reason I had to take time off. This time, it was just for me to paint without distraction, to be in that flow of creativity and just delight. Pardon me, my voice. Sorry about that. I'm going to have a sip of tea. How funny. I can accept that. That's probably all I need to do is just accept that and not fight it. But anyway, you know, just it was just a lovely time. And I realized, you know, the desire to paint wasn't just my idea. It was inspiration. And in honoring it, I honored the infinite self that gave me the idea. And the benefit I got from it was revitalizing and healing. Like it really was. It was like a little mini vacation in that day. It did so much good for my soul. It was wonderful. So that was one example of acceptance. And I have a couple more. So as I was, you know, when I was doing other things, I would be listening to Audible or YouTube. And one day, in fact, it was when I was going to paint, I was scrolling through my library on Audible. And the Dhammapada caught my attention. And I've listened to it. I've read it. I've listened to it several times. And I thought, that's perfect. Absolutely perfect. So the version I love and the one that I have on Audible, actually one of the versions that I have on Audible, I have two, is Eknath Eshwaran's Introduction and Translation. And it's so beautiful and so user-friendly. You know, it's the way he writes, it is just, it's his heart. You know, you're reading his heart. But it's lovely to listen to. The translator or the reader is Paul Baisley, and he's wonderful. But I love the story. It's a fabulous story. And especially the part, and I listened to the whole story, which, you know, as again, I've heard it many, many times. But the part that really, I think, got my attention again, or lit up for me, I should say, is the part where he achieved enlightenment and gave the world the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Now, the foundation of those things, of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, is acceptance. That's the foundation of it. So I'm listening to it again from my place where I am in my evolution of practicing acceptance and learning more and more about it and delving deeper and deeper in it. So I'm going to read from the Dhammapada, but also I'm going to interject things, and it's all mixed together between the Buddha's words and Eshwaran's translation. But he wrote, "The Buddha's return is a pivotal moment, one of those rare events when the divine penetrates history and transfigures it. Like Moses returning from Mount Sinai, like Jesus appearing in the crowd at the River Jordan to be baptized by John, a man who has left the world returns to serve it, no longer merely human, but charged with transcendent power. As the scriptures record of Moses and Jesus, we can imagine how the Buddha must have shined at that bright spring morning in the Himalayan foothills. Dazzled by the radiance of his personality, it is said that people gathered about him and asked, 'Are you a god?' 'No.' 'Are you an angel?' 'No.' 'What are you then?' And the Buddha smiled and answered simply, 'I am awake.'" Ooh, gives me chills. The literal meaning of the word Buddha is to wake up. So when the Buddha's back, now, just contextually, if that's the right word, Siddhartha, Gautama Siddhartha, who became the Buddha, his mission was to end suffering. You know, he was raised very, very sheltered, the son of a nobleman who was intended to take over his father's business when he grew up. he was sheltered from any negative thing. And so when he encountered an old woman, a beggar, a corpse. And I'm trying to think, I'm thinking there are four. But anyway, he'd never seen people like that. He'd never seen an old person. He'd never seen a beggar because he had everything. Everything he could possibly want materially in his life. And so when he saw those things, he was determined to find a way to end suffering. And so he went out and he practiced and he became an ascetic. And he went sort of from guru to guru, so to speak. And finally, he had practiced asceticism, you know, renouncing the body, trying to get out of the body, get out of this material world by denying the body, that it's said that he ate one grain of rice a day, and he was so thin, so emaciated, that you could see his backbone from his stomach. And he went out into the Ganges River, and he almost drowned because he had no energy. And he couldn't meditate, he couldn't think, he couldn't focus. So he was pulled out of the river, and he ended up sitting under the Bodhi tree, and a woman came and gave him some food. And he was determined to sit there until he attained enlightenment. He wasn't going to move until he attained enlightenment, which he did. So when Eshwaran said, upon his return, it's from returning from that experience. So prior to that experience, he had people that followed him because he was an ascetic and he was very good at it. So he had followers. And Eshwaran wrote that when his five former disciples found him, he told them, "I have done what is to be done. I have found the deathless, the unconditioned. I have seen life as it is. I have entered nirvana beyond the reach of sorrow." Nirvana means to breathe out or to blow out. Like when that weight falls off your shoulders and you just go, oh. That's what it means. That's what the word literally means, Sanskrit meaning. So his followers asked him to teach them what he found. And he began to teach the Dharma, the overarching Dharma, which is the path that leads to the end of sorrow. Eshwaran said, that was the moment the compassionate one set in motion the wheel of the Dharma, which will never cease revolving so long as there are men and women who follow his path. The path consists of the Four Noble Truths. The first truth is the fact of suffering. Everyone desires happiness. What is good, pleasant, right, permanent, joyful, harmonious, satisfying, at ease, yet all find that life brings just the opposite. Frustration, dissatisfaction, incompleteness, suffering, sorrow. Life is change. And change can never satisfy desire. Therefore, everything that changes brings suffering. The second truth is the cause of suffering. It's not life that brings sorrow, but the demands we make on it. The cause of suffering is selfish desire, the thirst to have what one wants and to have one's own way. Thinking life can make them happy by bringing what they want, people run after the satisfaction of their desires, but they get only unhappiness because selfishness can only bring sorrow. There is no fire like selfish desire, brothers. Not 100 years of experience can extinguish it, for the more you feed it, the more it burns. It demands what experience cannot give, permanent pleasure unmixed with anything unpleasant. But there is no end to such desires. That is the nature of the mind. So the word selfishness is synonymous with clinging, needing, forcing, pushing, demanding, That's what that means, selfish desire. It's that. I have to have this or I'll die. I have this car, but I want a better one, or clinging and needing just absolutely freezes things right in place. Whatever you need stays right outside your fingers, right outside your grasp. Needing, clinging, forcing, pushing are all repelling energies. All repelling energies. And they don't bring what you want. And the thing, when he says that it demands what experience cannot give, permanent pleasure unmixed with anything unpleasant, it reminds me of Ram Dass saying, we all want to be back in the garden. We all want to be back when everything was one, when we were one with God, God was one, where there was no other at all. And we knew it. Actually, we didn't know it because there was no other. So that would be a pair of opposites. But that's what we want to get back to. We want to get back to that peace because we know it inherently. It is our soul. We know it. But humanly, we seek to fulfill that desire by getting things, by having things, by doing things here in the physical. And they're all, again, temporal. Everything that comes into being goes away. So the third truth is that any ailment that can be understood can be cured, and suffering that has a cause has also an end. When the fires of selfishness have been extinguished, and the mind is free of selfish desire, what remains is a state of wakefulness, of peace, of joy, of perfect health, called nirvana. Again, the big exhale after letting go. You let go of your grip, and you breathe. You breathe. You rest. The fourth truth is that selfishness can be extinguished by following an eightfold path. Right understanding, right purpose, right speech, right conduct, right occupation, right effort, right attention, and right meditation. If Dharma is a wheel, these eight are its spokes. Right understanding is seeing life as it is. In the midst of change, where is there a place to stand firm? Where is there anything to have and hold? To know that happiness cannot come from anything outside, and that all things that come into being have to pass away, this is right understanding, the beginning of wisdom, also known as acceptance. Right purpose follows from right understanding. It means willing, desiring, and thinking that is in line with life as it is. Right speech, right action, right occupation follow from right purpose. They mean living in harmony with the unity of life. Speaking kindly, acting kindly, living not just for oneself, but for the welfare of all. And that's integrity, service, demonstrating God, right? How do we demonstrate God? Through love, giving, serving, and then rest. That's it. Doing what we know to do, being that inlet and outlet of grace. The last three steps, the Buddha said, the last three steps, brothers, deal with the mind. Everything depends on mind. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Suffering follows an evil thought as the wheels of a cart follow the oxen that draw it. Joy follows a pure thought like a shadow that never leaves. Back to everything is relative, right? We reap what we sow in thought, word, and action in every moment. Nothing is a thing unto itself. Everything has a result. Everything, everything, everything. So, the last three, right effort is the constant endeavor to train oneself in thought, word, and action. Right attention follows right effort It means keeping the mind where it should be. Whatever is positive, whatever benefits others, what conduces to kindness or peace of mind, those states of mind lead to progress. Give them full attention. Whatever is negative, whatever is self-centered, whatever feeds malicious thought or stirs up the mind, those states of mind draw one downward. Turn your attention away. Right meditation is the means of training the mind. So as I was listening to the seventh right attention that I just read to you, it means keeping the mind where it should be, whatever is positive, what benefits others, what conduces to kindness or peace of mind, those states of mind lead to progress. Give them full attention. I looked up because I have Philippians 4:8 on a piece of paper hanging on my wall beside my monitor. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. I never realized that before. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Truth is truth. Truth is truth. The Buddhist teaching is about being in life. About being in life, not escaping it, but having it as it comes. The Eightfold Path is simple. It's a simple path to experience the peace that already exists within us, regardless of what's happening. Giving, loving, serving, resting. I mean, just being that instrument. Again, the clear instrument, the Father's appearing. As Alan Watts said, the mystic accepts the circumstance as it is, himself as he is, and the relationship between the two. And in that total acceptance, which is the acceptance of the present moment, he finds freedom. Because nothing is pushing against anything else. He's not trying to make things different. That's so powerful. It's so, so powerful. Here's another example. Ram Dass. Another thing I happened to listen to last week, kind of out of the blue actually, was a Ram Dass lecture. I think it was called Becoming Human. I'm not sure, but I think it was called Becoming Human, something like that. Anyway, in it, he talked about, and this is a big paraphrase, because I only listened to it once, but he talked about being in training with a Zen master, doing some really deep meditation work. And while he was on this course, and I mean, this is heavy-duty stuff, like if you made a noise, they'd smack you. You know, I mean, really, really heavy-duty disciplined work. So while he was in this training, he received word that his father's wife, his father had already died, but his wife was diagnosed with cancer and needed help. So he told the Zen master that he had to leave and explained why. And the Zen master told him he should stay, because what he was doing was important work and he was making good progress. And they talked back and forth and the same thing. I think I should go. No, you should stay because of this. In the end, Ram Dass left. He went to take care of his father's wife. And he said that for his spiritual work, it would have been great to stay. But humanly, he had to leave. He had to go and help. He said that people had been thanking him for being human. And he found that really funny. And he goes, people just tell me, thank you for just being human. Because again, you know, kind of like the Zen master he's talking about, that's so far above or out of range of a lot of times what we can even think, right? Or what we could hope to attain. But, and he, you know, certainly he'd been teaching for a long, long time. And that all of a sudden people are thanking him for being human because of stories like that, not because of that story in particular, but others that he'd talked about. And he said it was funny. He said, you know, I've spent the last 20 years trying to be holy, and now people are thanking me for being human. And, you know, he kind of laughed about that. But he also said in a different lecture, and I've mentioned this before too, because it's very powerful, that in being human, he knew if he pushed any experience away, meaning life experience or whatever it is, in the physical, human experience, he would never be free. So, I love that story. I really, that it's a very, very enjoyable lecture. The last thing I want to share with you in these last few minutes, when my voice decides to crack, that's a nice word, was of course, like the cherry on top, is I got my monthly email from the Reverend Ike Legacy yesterday. And I want to share it with you because it goes back to the seventh of the Eightfold Path and Philippians 4:8. And it said, you've probably heard the saying, you are what you eat. But many people don't realize that you're also whatever you feed your mind. Everything in your life is a reflection of the ideas, thoughts, and beliefs in your mind. Therefore, you have to be very careful. Because whatever ideas you feed your conscious mind, your subconscious mind will bring it into your experience. If you feed your mind negative ideas, you're going to have negative results, and vice versa. You should feed your mind only right ideas. And just like you can't eat good food once a month and expect to be healthy, you can't just think one positive thought once a month and expect your life to change for the better. You must constantly and continually feast upon positive ideas. The Bible tells us man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. As you practice consistent and continual positive thinking, these positive ideas will seep into your subconscious mind, and the mind of God in you will prepare you to experience the good that you desire. Here's the affirmative prayer treatment. I feed my mind only good ideas. I mentally and spiritually feast on the idea of good health. I am full of happiness, and the presence of God in me gives me every reason to be successful. God in me is my unlimited source of all good. Another form of acceptance is accepting that the kingdom of heaven is within you, and no good is ever, ever withheld from you. We are what we seek. We are what we seek. So acceptance is everywhere, 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 not just in circumstances that show up that it kind of like, you know, just accept it. When somebody says just accept it, it's usually just accept something that we don't like, you know, that it's usually kind of, it starts with like a negative thing that's happening and that we want to push against, but okay. And then accept it, accept yourself, you know, go through the whole thing and give it away. You know, I surrender this. I sacrifice how I feel about it. I don't know what to do with it. I relinquish all power, control, and responsibility to that which lives me who does, and then get out of the way. But how about accepting every good thing? You know, every good thing that comes into our experience, you know, not talking, I think we have sometimes the tendency to talk ourselves out of it, you know, thinking back, you know, in the human mind of whether we deserve it or not. Kind of like that day I took off to paint. It was perfect. It was perfect. But I had to accept that. I had to give myself permission to do it and accept that permission. And it was wonderful. It was a peaceful reprieve, and I loved it, and it made me more excited to get back to my regular work the next day. So, I don't know. This is just, it's important to me, and what's important to me, and what I'm learning, and what I'm experiencing, I have to share. So, I hope you found it valuable. And I think that completes our circle for today. You've been listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world. I hope you have a very, very blessed week. And please stay tuned for Katie Weaver. Bye, everyone.